listening to the Save the Marriage podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
I remember the moment. We were sitting in my office, and I noticed that this couple sitting on my couch were about as opposite as they could be in terms of the way they were moving in their body language. He was leaning over the arm of the sofa as far away as he could be from her, almost like he didn't even want to be on the same couch. She was just on her side of the middle of the couch, leaning towards him. So they both were leaning in his direction, but he was obviously trying to get away from her. She was obviously trying to get close to him. And as they talked, I realized that what was going on between them was fear. Fear had gripped both of them, but in this case, almost opposite fears. You see, we all have fears, and we all have fears in relationship. And in marriage, we have two particular fears that can work against each other, almost creating a whirlwind of fear between a couple. You see, this is one of those immutable laws of marriage that all of us have fears. We all have fears. The reason we all have fears is because we're all wired for fears. And we bring those wirings into a marriage. We bring it into the intimate relationship, and it only is exacerbated there. You see, our human brain is actually wired primarily to look for those fearful places, the threats in our lives. It goes back to our genetic ancestors who passed along these extra careful genes to us. The reason the extra careful genes were passed on to us is because the less careful didn't make it through. Those who were more cautious, those who saw threats where there weren't threats versus those who didn't see the threats where there were threats, ended up having their genetic material passed on to the next generation. So generation after generation, all we did is create more and more careful genes, more and more fearful genes. Our very brain, though, is wired from the outset to be careful. We have this part of our brain called the reptilian brain, very primitive part of our brain that we really share with most things that crawl, swim, fly, that is all about looking for threat. The amygdala is part of that brain, and all it's doing is scanning the environment for any threat around it. When there is a threat or a seeming threat, the red flags go up, the body goes on alert, we are ready to get away. Now, that's the part of the brain that we have with all those other creatures, and so we're always looking for that threat, trying to make sure that we're never surprised, trying to make sure that we survive. Now, on top of that piece of the brain is the mammalian brain. We share that with the warm-blooded creatures, and the reason we have that part of the brain is because it brings us emotions. Reptiles don't really need emotions. They don't have a whole lot of bonding to them, and they don't really get angry. They just protect their surroundings and decide what they can do to defend themselves. Do they get out of the way, or do they fight? Mammals, though, are about bonding. Mammals are about groupings. And because of that, mammals have some emotions. We have to have emotions to want to be around people like us or creatures like us. And we do it with two emotions, love and hate, love and anger. And those are the two pieces that our brain can be wired for so that we have these two emotions in our brain. One is the love, is being with people like us, being with creatures like us, the connection between creatures. The hate, the anger is against us, joining with creatures to go against a common enemy. And both of those create the ways that we bond together. So we join together with each other, and we join together against something else. And so those two emotions live in our mammalian brain. So you notice that a dog can show emotion, or a horse can show emotion, or a bear can show emotion. Mammals tend to be able to show some level of emotion. We humans have another piece that we share with some other creatures, but we have most advanced that piece, the neocortex. That's the part that is responsible for your language, your capacity to reason, your ability to think in the abstract. So not only can you have the emotions, but you can think about those emotions, and you can think about what caused those emotions, and you can think about those threats and replay them in your head. So while another animal may be able to go into threat mode and immediately leave, we humans have the capacity of going over and over and over with that threat in our mind, of reminding ourselves of why we have that fear. And so as I was sitting in my office with that couple, they were able to remind each other and talk to each other about this abstract idea of the fears between them, of her feeling like he was pulling away and didn't want anything to do with her, and for him to share the fear that he felt like he was being overwhelmed by her and she wanted to control him and she wanted to have every aspect of his life under her thumb. Both of them were able to think in abstract, not necessarily to think accurately, but to think in abstract about what was going on between them, to create stories that they told each other and they told themselves about what was going on and why they were responding the way they were. Earlier today, I got off the phone with a person who was telling me how she was trying to figure out what was going on between she and her husband. And she kept telling me, but everything she pointed to was about him and his irrationality and his being angry and hurtful, never recognizing that he might be feeling the exact same thing. She was telling the story about what he was doing to her. My guess is he was telling himself a story about what she had done in the relationship too. And that's the nature of these fears. Both sides have them, but both of them are based in stories that they've created over the years. And the problem is because we're wired for fear, we have fearful thoughts. And when we have fearful thoughts, it activates our fear. So notice those three parts of the brain, the amygdala looking for threats, the mammalian brain that adds emotion to it, then the neocortex that thinks about it, that postulates about it, that makes theories about it, that creates scenarios about it. So what happens? There's a threat, then we feel that hurt, we feel that anger, and then we think about that. And when we think about that, it translates into emotions, which then ramp up our bodies looking for the threats, and around and around and around that goes. And so we have fear as a major piece of our lives, and we have fear that we drag into relationships, and we have specific fears that we drag into our marriage, and we drag into our difficult times in a marriage. So every relationship has fears. All marriages have fears because we all have fears. The immutable law is that we all have fears. The question is, what do we do about them? Not that we can get rid of them, but how do we make sure that they don't derail us? As I was watching that couple on the couch, I was very clear that there were two fears that were playing off of each other between them. The first was the fear of abandonment, and the second was the fear of intimacy. We all have these fears within us. Some of us have more of one than the other, but we all can be triggered to have a fear of abandonment, and we all can be triggered to have a fear of intimacy. The fear of abandonment is that fear that we'll not have enough love, that the love we desperately need will be taken from us. And it comes from that place where we all need connection. We all need that place of being with somebody else. And it comes also from that childhood place where we all have this fantasy that we just didn't quite get what was fair to us. We didn't quite get the attention that was fair. We didn't quite get enough of what we wanted. Now it's a childhood thought, but we drag it into our adulthood. Now the fear of intimacy comes from that fear of being overwhelmed. And it comes from that place where we want to stand on our own and have our own sense of identity and have our own sense of who we are. And it comes out of our childhood place where our parents could tell us what to do and our parents could take over our lives if we couldn't do anything about it. And so that propelled us into this fear of intimacy. Now, if you came from dysfunctional family on one side or the other, it may be exacerbated. So a dysfunctional family where not enough love was shared can leave you with a lingering fear of abandonment. And if you came from a family that was kind of the super glue family where the dysfunction was all in a big, being a big glob of conglomeration, then you can have a fear of intimacy because you've seen that. But either way, we all have these fears within us, and all of them can be activated in the midst of a relationship, and all of them are sometimes activated in the midst of a marriage, in the dance between couples. So we have these places, these soft places from our childhood where we didn't get all that we needed or we got too much of what we didn't want, and then we add our thoughts about them and tell ourselves the stories of them, and you'll notice those two fears, how they might trigger each other. With my couple on the couch, whenever she felt like he was pulling away, she would begin to grab at him, trying to make herself feel better about that fear of abandonment. And whenever she was trying to grab at him, he pulled away, trying to establish that he needed his independence in that fear of intimacy. And round it went. And it doesn't matter where you start. It doesn't matter who began the process, and my guess is that it arose spontaneously. There comes a pattern. The more she chases, the more he runs. The more he runs, the more she chases. The more she chases, the more he runs. And she becomes the chaser, and he becomes the distancer. And they'll maintain the same space between them, but how fast they're moving is the question. The space between them is likely to stay pretty similar. The faster she goes, the faster he goes. The faster he goes, the faster she goes. If she were to slow down, he would slow down. If he were to slow down, she might slow down too. And in that process, they might find a new way of navigating the dance between them. That's the dance of a marriage, where there is a certain space necessary between, and the tension is between too much space and not enough space. So then what happens in the midst of a struggle? Well, we add in that fight, flight, freeze that we've heard about so much, where when we're fight, flight, freeze, we're trying to deal with the situation at hand, either by winning by overcoming, or winning by escaping, or winning by not being noticed. And when we do that, we get into a win-escape mode where nobody wins and nobody escapes, where the scars are done, where the battles are lost, even as you're trying to win, because no longer is it about solving the issue. Now it's about protecting self, or at least protecting what you imagine is self, even if that self includes relationship. So we have these fears that run rampant through relationships. Couples find themselves trapped in this pattern where one is chasing and the other is distancing. My guess is, if I were to bet, right now you are the chaser. You may not always be in your relationship. Sometimes couples trade places back and forth, but the fact that you're looking for a way of working on the relationship tells me that you're likely to be in the midst of chasing right now. And it's possible that your spouse right now is in the midst of being a distancer. We all have these fears. The question is not whether the fears are there, but whether you allow the fears to dominate the success of your relationship or not. Those fears are always going to be in the background, but they don't have to determine where your relationship is going to go. You see, those fears are at least partly irrational. It is possible that somebody is going to leave a relationship, and it is possible that somebody is going to be overly controlling and forceful. But that doesn't mean you will lose all the love that you ever need in the world, nor does it mean that you will lose yourself to the relationship. Those are the irrational pieces, that we're not going to have what we need, and that we're going to lose ourselves to the relationship, because both of those come from within. We all have the capacity of standing on our own feet, and we all have the capacity of establishing who we are, no matter what's going on in the relationship. So how do we deal with these fears that are the immutable part of a marriage? We can't stop it. That's the nature of an immutable law. You can pretend it's not there for a while, but it's going to get activated. It's going to cause problems unless you understand how to get around it. So the immutable law is that we all have fears. The question is whether those fears destroy our relationship or whether they're just part of the matrix of our relationship, part of the threads and the weaving of our relationship, part of the dance as we begin to understand it. So how do you deal with those fears? Well, first comes awareness, being aware of these fears, that what's being triggered within you is likely to either be a fear of abandonment or a fear of intimacy. That begins to help you put it in categories. And once we can point to it and understand what's going on, we don't have to live within that. We have some room on deciding whether we're going to be dominated by that fear or whether that fear is simply a part of our lives. We all have the fear, so it's not going to go away, but how it determines our actions changes. If you know that you're feeling a fear of abandonment, you can choose whether you pursue or whether you stay still. If you know you're feeling a fear of intimacy, you can choose whether you pull away or whether you stay still. And so once you have that reality check of knowing that the fear is there, then you can face the fact that that fear is just a part, a makeup of the relationship, not the determining factor of the relationship, which means that you can then decide how you're going to manage your fears. It's immutable that the fear is there. What's optional is whether the fear captivates your relationship and destroys it, or simply a piece of it. So how do you manage it? Well, the first thing is to see that those thoughts you're building in your head, those stories you're telling you in your head, are false. Not necessarily reality. They might reflect reality to some level, but they're not reality. All of us have thoughts that are ways that we interpret the reality going on around us. They're stories we keep telling ourselves over and over. So the first thing is to recognize that that thought is just a thought. The second is to relax and breathe. When you find yourself feeling the need to chase after your spouse, to relax and breathe. When you found yourself feeling the need to push away from a spouse, feeling like you're going to lose yourself to it, relax and breathe. Because as you do that, you calm your body down out of that state of arousal, and you find a way of realizing that you can self-soothe, that you can be okay, that you can establish some clear boundaries and stick with who you need to be. You breathe through your diaphragm. Diaphragmatic or belly breathing is the way to calm your mind in the midst of those fears as they pop up. The third piece is to recognize that when there is arousal, and I don't mean attraction to somebody else, but when you feel that those feelings of adrenaline coming into your system, you know, when you've begun an argument and you feel it begin to build, when you're getting to that place where you're almost in fight or flight mode, decide you need to back off. Arousal is when your body is being pulled into a place of readiness, a state of readiness, and the adrenaline's flowing and you're feeling ready to take on something else. And when that happens, to back off, to say, hey, you know what, we need to take a break. I'm not sure that I can continue moving in this discussion in a way that's going to be beneficial. So why don't we take about a half hour break and just take a calm down? It takes about 30 minutes for that adrenaline level to get back to normal so that you can re-engage and deal with the problem at hand. Not go after the win, not go after the escape, but stick with the issue at hand. Now remember that when you back off, that's not your chance for flight. That's a time to calm down and move back into a problem-solving mode. The fourth step is to admit it to your spouse, to recognize that you're a little overwhelmed with the relationship right now and you need a little space. That it's not about the other person, it's about your own space. Or to admit that you're feeling a little bit distant and you need to find a way of getting closer and finding a way of bridging that gap. Because when you admit it, now you're dealing with the rational statement of fear, not the irrational impact of fear. You stop the chase running process. You stop the distancing between you because you've now named it as a fear, as something that you can face, something you can describe. So use those strategies to recognize that even though the fears are an immutable part of your relationship, they don't have to derail you. If you're not sure how to build on that, please check out my website, SaveTheMarriage.com. See if that system might help you build a connection in a very calm way so that you can get back to the place you need to be. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to save your marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.